Hey, friends, welcome again to the Mentality of Combat Sports. David Mullins is a sports psychologist or a sports psychology consultant. I'm Robin Black. I talk about fighting for a living. And we talk about anything related to psychology, mentality, as it relates to fighting, preparation, life, all kinds of stuff. It's been really fun. We've done 20 of these?
Yeah, more? Maybe more even. Yeah.
Maybe 25, which is crazy.
Yeah.
We started out, you know, I pursued you from reading some of your work and having a real interest in it. And then we brought you in to talk about a couple of related things.
Connor and stuff. Yeah.
And then I'm like, we gotta hang out and do this all the time.
Yeah.
It's been over a year.
Yeah.
Crazy. It's super fun. Yeah, and people seem to respond really well to it. And thank you. Speaking of people responding well, we always say, please send us in questions and ask us anything, and we'll do our best to get to it. And then we've often kind of allowed those questions to sort of direct conversation, but we haven't actually ever properly addressed them. And you have some.
Now it's time to do that.
Yeah.
Because I asked people yesterday to send me in some questions, and I got some great questions from people. So we can answer them during the course of the conversation.
Awesome.
We'll pop them up, and it'll just lead us in a direction.
People, it's a really cool thing. We wanted to do this for fun, but we also wanted to do it because of how interesting all these things are. And if you love fighting and if you love the martial arts, you as soon as a door is open to the idea that, well, wait, how you might perceive a situation or how you might experience a situation would dramatically affect the physical reaction, everything. As soon as that door's opened, as a fan and as somebody who finds fighting really interesting, like the people that watch shows about thinking and fighting, immediately you need to know more of these things.
Yeah, and you see it all differently. You look at fights differently, and then you want to learn more. And the more you – like if you watched – Rockhold Bisping, you want to learn, you want to know what happened there and why was it so different to the first time and what was going on. And people who have watched this show the last few episodes, we've talked about a lot of the stuff that led up to what we saw, so we can get into that in depth. And not a lot of people have asked about that. Like, that's the main thing people are asking about.
Cool. Well, I haven't seen the question, so that's going to be really fun. But before we do, what happened? What was happening with both of them? Before, during, leading up to it, after, and how they react to situations. I'm using Connor as an example because it was a very specific one. He lost, and by the time we saw him again, he was already looking for answers.
Yeah.
Rockhold said, "You got lucky, and next time it won't happen."
Yeah, he wanted to go again in a couple of weeks, and Bisping had to remind him that he's suspended now.
Right. He wanted to go again kind of there, at least verbally.
Yeah.
So before, during, after, the moments of the fight, the weeks leading up to it, who you are, how you see the world, these are some of the things that you recognize matter, and so we get into them. But should we get to
one of these? Yeah, so this is the main question that I've been getting. So Jacob King from Melbourne. He asked, he's curious about the line between being confident and overconfident. Mm-hmm. How does one know they've gone over that line? And that's he's obviously referring to Rockhold, which is it's a question I've got from a lot of people over since that fight. Because I think we could all feel it before the fight. Rockhold looked like he just had to turn up. He turned up and he was like, oh, just why are we even doing this?
I'm so good.
Let's just raise my hand now and let's get this over with. Save Bisping the beating. And I can go home. That's what he looked like before the fight.
Even more than that, he was disinterested in the intros. Like you were at my house, and you're looking at it, and he's like,
"Yeah, he was." Cormier was behind the cage, kind of getting him, trying to get him kind of going. I think maybe I don't know if he recognized he was a little flat or whatever.
Consciously or felt it.
Rocco's like, "I got this.
Yeah,
I got this. Don't worry about this. I got this. This is easy. I've already beaten this guy." So what's going on there? That there is such a thing as overconfidence. To explain what Jacob's asking about, you know, that line between confidence and overconfidence, we need to understand it's more like a curve, a bell curve, where on the wrong end of it, the bad end of it, you've got diffidence, which is like low confidence, where you don't think you're as good as you really are, and your confidence is really low. That's not good. You're not going to be able to perform well. Then we go up and we've got optimal confidence, which is where you want to be. And that can be a wide range where you're just the right amount of confidence. And it's not just I hope I turn up and I feel that. Mm-hmm. That's that's a controllable, and that's based on a lot of different factors, which we'll get into. But that optimal range is where you want to be. Then you can go too far, though, and get to that overconfidence. And that's a real thing where you're not going to, again, you're not going to perform. So there's two types of overconfidence. There's inflated confidence, where you think you're better than you really are. You think this task is much easier than it really is, which I think maybe there was a that's obviously what Rockhold was kind of bordering on or had crossed into on the night. And there's a number of factors why he would have, because he had beat this guy already. And when I was talking about the fight in the preview, I was saying how Rockhold was talking about how he finished him with one hand. Remember that guillotine was a one-handed guillotine? Yeah. I can beat this guy with one hand.
Yeah.
With one arm. That's what he said. And if he starts to think that way after the fight, if he attributes the win after the fight to,
I'm
on a different level to that guy. Yeah. A few levels above. Yeah. That was easy. I'm much better than him. I can finish him with one hand. If he attributes that as the reason why he won, then complacency is going to set in when you get a rematch handed to you.
When the reason he won was every moment and second of effort and learning and rest and study and preparation, that's why he won.
Yeah.
Not because he's inherently better than this man.
Yeah, but I think he thought he was. I think he attributed as the reason. So that complacency started to set in from that moment. Now, he wasn't matched up against Bisping originally. He was matched up against Weidman. But even then, there was hints of the complacency going into the rematch with Weidman when that was on, that he maybe thought, I'm just on a different level to these guys. And like the Vitor loss was just because Vitor got TRT. That was a fluke. I'm better than everyone.
The extra steps, you mentioned Weidman. And let's say, so you first off, you used a bell curve to illustrate it. We can also illustrate it just as a straight line. And in that straight line, it gets redder and redder, as in better and better.
Yeah.
And then cools off and worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
So the bell curve illustrates that, take that straight line and raise it. But you can also, or put it this way, confidence keeps going up, but there's a hot spot in the middle as it raises where it goes up to the point of perfection. If perfection is maybe not the right word, but up to the point of optimization and then up weakening as it starts soaring upwards past the optimal point. Bell curve is a great illustration.
Yeah.
But let's just say that he was at a pretty good point in his confidence, maybe a little overconfident with Weidman, but serious. Suddenly going, oh, God, it's not even Weidman now. It's this chump.
Yeah.
It's that extra step of what he had been preparing for. Maybe he was underestimating that, but not by that much. And suddenly it's like, oh, God, it's not even this. Yeah. It's even easier than I was thinking.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be pretty easy to beat Chris again, but now it's going to be really easy to beat this guy. I beat him with one arm.
I beat him with one arm. And if we go back from the first fight, the reason you beat him with one arm – first off, he was pretty much knocked out already from the head kick that you landed. That's why you like, it was a beautiful finish that we jumped in that guillotine.
Yeah,
it was really good. Yeah. And a butterfly sweep and finish on top. And, you know, it was just special the way he finished it. The head kick happened because he was setting it up with the body kicks. And Bisping went to catch that body kick and then, boom, it's a head kick. Mm-hmm. And that happened because he was dictating the range. Yeah. He was performing well.
And that happened because you came in prepared purposefully and perfectly focused.
Yeah, mentally focused, and he was sharp and he was on point. That's why he was able to finish with one hand.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just look at it like, I can beat this guy, I'm on a different level, then the complacency sets in, and that's what maybe what we saw a little bit. And what we saw in the cage during the introductions would have – that's the ultimate kind of place for it to be. But that would have been happening during the prep and during the build-up and that focus backstage and that focus in the week of the fight.
Yeah.
It's just not there. That sharpness is not there.
And every moment of training, if it is not perfectly or properly focused, it's like, don't worry, man. Look how good I'm looking.
Yeah.
I couldn't even throw kicks in, which was oddly a lie because I saw footage of him throwing kicks. But I couldn't even throw kicks, but don't you worry about it, man. I got this guy. Mm-hmm. And that, like you noticed, Cormier trying, whether it's like very consciously or subconsciously, feeling, man, we got to get this guy going.
Yeah.
Get going. That could have been happening in training.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, man, you're not working that hard. You're not pushing as hard. Or, you know, you look good, but like, let's turn it up a bit. That could be, you could be
It could have been. We don't know, but it could have been. It would make sense that if it's there on fight night, it would have been there in the preparation. Yeah. So that's that inflated confidence that he thinks the task is easier than it really is. Doesn't respect the opponent as much as he obviously should have. Didn't see a way how Bisping could beat him, really. And that's what it felt like. So that's on him, that and a little bit on other people around him and stuff to have, mm-hmm. you know, making sure that that's being recognized and he is getting focused on what the task is. That's the inflated confidence, which is a mm-hmm. version of overconfidence. There's also like false confidence where you try to act
right
confident. You try to put on a show, but really you're feeling yeah. you're feeling lots of doubts, lots of nerves, not feeling confident. So I don't know if there's a bit of that too. That he was putting on a front.
Which is a lie to yourself,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And one of the reasons one could lie to themselves is if they're like, I'm nervous. Yeah, but I'm so much better than this mm-hmm. guy. It still works with that one. Those yeah. two can work together. You're lying about your own nervousness and using the inflated confidence as your reason to lie.
Exactly. And why should someone who's so good feel nervous? That doesn't make sense. No. Someone who's so good shouldn't feel these doubts. So I'm just not gonna
address,
feel them. I'm not gonna show them. I'm just gonna act cocky and confident mm-hmm. and dismissive and mm-hmm. all of that stuff. So we see a bit of that, but that can underneath that false confidence, there is, you know, a diffidence, a lack of confidence. Mm-hmm. And to me, that the thing that stood out during that week or that build up was when he was talking about his knee being injured mm-hmm. in the build up to the fight. Like when they were sitting down with Bisping in a press conference, he's talking about the knee and he's not being able to train properly. Why are we mentioning this? We don't mm-hmm. need to be talking about this. We can address it with our self-talk, but we don't need to let everyone know. It's like there's an excuse now yeah. pre-built in.
We addressed this with Sage Northcutt
yeah.
when all week long it was and after. And he's a young man who hasn't had the time to or, you know, hasn't been exposed to these kinds of ideas yet and would be scary to experience. And it would be natural for a young person who hadn't addressed those things to be like, just hide it or deal with it in any type of coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Bisping addressed that then, said, you're feathering your nest for that. And he's like, no, I'm just making my win even better, which is actually an aspect of that
self-handicapping.
Yeah. Part of self-handicapping for you is when I win, it'll even be better because I told you that I accidentally ate this thing and I'm sick.
Yeah.
Or I accidentally hurt this thing. So his answer to being accused of self-handicapping was, I'm just self-handicapping. He said, you're feathering your nest for it. No, I'm making it better. He just, you
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the same
just
thing.
The other side yeah, of the yeah. thing.
And, yeah. and he had a knee injury. I mean, I'm not saying mm-hmm. that he wasn't injured. I'm just saying it doesn't matter. At this stage, you're doing the fight, it doesn't matter mm-hmm. now. You need to have addressed these doubts. And that's where that question is like, how do you avoid that? How do you know you've crossed that line? Mm-hmm. How do you stop yourself crossing the line from being optimally confident to going to that overconfidence? That comes from people around you, mm-hmm. making sure that you're staying switched on, recognizing that the work ethic's not there, the same kind of drive is not there. That can be seen early and stop before it starts to snowball. It comes from it's talking about those doubts. I'm talking like with someone like me, ideally, but then if it's just addressing them to yourself, you know, addressing those doubts or a friend or a coach yeah. or teammate or yeah. whoever, but addressing the doubts that are there because they're going to be there. So if you're pretending they're not there, then you're starting to get to that overconfident mm-hmm. kind of state where you're pretending that you're not feeling doubts. And that's a scary place to be.
So ideally with you or somebody like you with some expertise. And some coaches, Bisping's coach sounds like he has some yeah. of this developed some as part of his own job. It is good to talk about it with anyone, but you also realize that expertise is important to frame it, help you frame it, because if you talk to a friend who's like, don't worry about it, man, you got this guy.
Yeah.
This guy's a punk.
Yeah.
They can reinforce that.
Yeah, exactly.
So talking can help. But who you talk to and how they respond to you will affect it.
Yeah.
You see it all the time. Don't worry, bro. You got this guy. This guy sucks, man. You beat whoever.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You beat him with one arm. Like it can be reinforced. You search for a little bit of encouragement or support or to try a sounding board, and the sounding board can give you back and reinforce the wrong choices.
Yeah, and exactly. It just reinforces, and it also reinforces the idea that I shouldn't be feeling these doubts. Mm-hmm. I should be feeling much better.
I am the champ.
I am the best. I am on yeah. a different level. I did beat yeah. him with one arm. So then, I shouldn't be feeling these doubts. Let's just completely ignore them. Let's push them away. Let's just act cocky and confident and not address them. So that can be what happened. I mean, we talked about it with Verdum the last day, where mm-hmm. Verdum's doing that goofy face, and he wasn't acting all cocky and dismissive, but he doing that goofy face as his way of
coping.
Oh shit! Yeah. Like here we are now, and I haven't prepared for this mentally. Yeah. I'm not sharp.
Yeah. I avoided a lot of things that I shouldn't have avoided because here we are, and I haven't dealt with it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you gotta address those doubts that are there. You gotta mm-hmm. and accept them and have a self-talk about them. Figure out what's going on. Like, we talked heavily the last day about Bisping. Haven't done that. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why I gave him such a big, big chance in this fight. Mm-hmm. I thought he was very much in the fight because he had addressed the doubts that were there. The short notice fight, the rematch, the lack of, you know, cardio and preparation for a 5-round fight, all that different stuff. He had addressed them all and come up with some good answers of himself and Jason Prello, his coach. They had talked about it together, and he's kind
they
of
liked
settled.
What they saw.
Yeah.
They liked what they found. They found truths in it that were good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of the questions, because it's a great question. It's a great way of asking it. Wesley Gorman in Dublin. Mm-hmm. Did Bisping's change?
Dublin, eh?
Yeah,
oh, Dublin. Some of our Irish friends. I'm honorary Irish now. I've been told many times, so you know. You're an actual Irish.
Robin O'Black. Did Bisping's change of mental approach make the difference between winning and losing? Mm-hmm. Now,
I don't know if change.
Yeah, well, there's a change in terms of he talked himself about the not being so emotional in the fights.
Talk to me about that specifically.
Yeah, not getting so emotionally charged and kind of stepping in there and taking a bit more control of the of his mindset and understanding that emotion, that attachment to the opponent or whatever it might have been, it's not helpful in the fight itself. Plus, he addressed, like we said, he addressed with his self-talk in that interview that he did in the build-up, he addressed all of the doubts that would have been there. Mm-hmm. He had accounted for them, addressed them, and he was happy where they were now. Mm-hmm. He was comfortable with 2 weeks. That's fine. I've got good conditioning.
Yeah.
I'm going to make weight.
There were some negatives to longer training.
Yeah,
there were some negatives to over preparation. Yeah. There were some negatives to the roller coaster psychologically of 6 or 8 or 10 weeks to prepare. All of those things.
Yeah, I've just beat Anderson over 5 rounds not that long ago. All this different stuff. Yeah. He addressed it all, and that meant that it's not the difference in winning and losing because you don't know what's going to happen. There's too many variables in a fight. But it meant that he was in the right mental state. Mm-hmm. You know, we're saying, and it's not a knock on Luke Rockhold, who's still one of the best fighters in the world. On that night, though, he didn't perform to where he could have been, where he should have been. But Michael did because he was mentally prepared. Mm-hmm. So his preparation, his mental preparation, his approach allowed him to capitalize on the complacency that Rockhold had.
There are two things that I want to bring up related to this. And one of them is we have seen a lot of different times. Well, actually, I'll start with the other one. The other one being sometimes feedback from people is a good thing because it lets you know where they're seeing or where they might have a question or how they respond to something. And some feedback that we'll get occasionally or I'll observe other people get related to this topic. Often a fan saying, well, this person was overconfident, or like a supporter saying this happened because of this, is a certain segment of people are misunderstanding it and they see it as some excuse and or in some way undermining the winner.
Yeah.
But we don't see it that way.
Not
at all.
Not at all.
Right? This is as real as throwing bad kicks.
Yeah.
Or this is as real as dropping your hands. Or this is as real as any of those things.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. I mean, the idea that I didn't have it that night or I didn't feel it that night, that's not an excuse. That's on you. That's part of the reason why you didn't win is because you mentally didn't prepare. As much as you need to get your defense right and circle the right way and get your range right and throw your kicks and throw your offense.
Yeah. Have flexibility when these things happen
mentally,
or make sure you make the right choices in other places.
Yeah, it's all mentally too. You need to be on the right place mentally to be able to go in and perform. That's part of the performance. It's not an excuse, like you're saying. It's not like oh, Luke didn't really lose because he didn't show up mentally.
And it's disrespectful to Bisping to say that's not.
It's actually complimentary to Bisping to show that he did.
Yeah.
You know, he did mentally prepare and he did address all the different stuff. And he came in there on point, focused, ready to go and put in a hell of a performance. He addressed a lot of the issues from the first fight, the way he was able to avoid the kick a little bit better. There wasn't as many of them, you know, but he saw something from the first fight, a few more feints this time, a few different things like that.
The angles at which he was going to enter against that hand.
Yeah.
That was a learn. He learned that. Also, you know, I've watched it a lot of times. The right hand, Brillo was saying, hit the target, and the target for that right hand was the sternum, to as a way to set up the left over top of the right. He set it up with a low kick. He set it up a few. That was the tool.
Yeah.
That was 100% the tool. And if it didn't knock him out, it was going to serve its purpose to change his approach, to change Rockhold's approach. Yeah. So that was all preparation. That was all learning. That was all learning heuristically from the situation. It was all his doing.
Yeah. Yeah, and that took a matter of sitting down and reviewing that first fight and figuring out, okay, what are the technical things we need to adjust here? What are the tactical things we need to adjust? What are the mental things we need to adjust?
What did we do wrong?
Yeah, exactly.
Where did we fail? Where were our failures? That adjustment, not everybody – Luke Rockhold hadn't done it in the last few times we've heard him speak, including that night.
Mm-hmm.
He may now. He may next week.
Yeah.
He may go in and go – and identify his failures. At the time, You Got Lucky isn't doing that.
Yeah.
But he can do that at any time, right?
For sure, he can.
The other thing I wanted to address related to that, so, you know, when people do see – often it'll be, well, I hate Rhonda, so therefore if somebody says Rhonda, so it's not really connected to truth. It's connected to I want to keep hating Luke or Bisping or Rockhold or whoever.
Just confirmation bias.
Exactly. So that – but there are definitely people who didn't quite realize that that is not an excuse or is not some kind of thing.
Yeah.
And also related to that, we have seen in situations – we don't know about this one. But if Rockhold kind of had whatever lackadaisical kind of thing and Bisping did not, that can further – Bisping being feeling good and not responding negatively or not shrinking can actually further help Bisping and further hinder Rockhold.
Yeah, it can have that effect where, oh, hang on, I am actually in a fighter. This guy, you know, this is going to be a fight. I'm not in that place.
Yeah.
I'm not in that place I usually am. And I think he might have been feeling some of that during the introductions. I'm not in that place.
Yeah.
Verdun felt it against Miocic, I'm sure. I'm not in that place. Conor against Nate. Yeah. Rhonda against Holly. Yeah. They're not in that state that they're usually in.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that last time.
And I was worried about that for Demetrius. That one day. We've never seen that. But the one day that you will.
Yeah.
And we were worried about that. I know there'll probably undoubtedly be something to do with Cruz.
Yeah.
You and I actually were concerned maybe Cruz was doing this a little bit, weren't we?
Yeah, we were, because there was hints of maybe he was thinking, I'm just on a different level to Faber. Faber's
which it
stuck.
Turned out to be true.
Faber's got and stuck and I've gone ahead. But he still had to, you know, that's fair enough if you believe that.
Yeah.
That can be fine. As long as you're putting in the work to back it up, as long as you're mentally focused and sharp, ready to go, and that's what he was.
And you're not using it as some type of excuse to not perform or some type of reason to perform less.
Yeah.
Leading into it, and the one thing that I was concerned was – not concerned. We still 100% he was the guy we expected to win that fight. But you're looking for these moments where you're like, shit. He is the guy to win that fight unless, just like with Rockhold or Verdum, these guys were in a hard fight. And if they showed up ready to be in a hard fight, they have all the skills to win it. Instead, they showed up denying that it was a hard fight and acting like it wasn't.
Yeah.
But Dominic Cruz was also talking a little bit about, I just want to get this thing over with. Mm-hmm. And that's not often a good thing.
It's not a good thing where I know what he means. I think what he means is by this thing, he means the rivalry with Faber. And just put that behind me now, because I'm sure he felt like he would do what he did in the fight, just be on another level.
Yeah.
And he did, you know, all the drama around the fight.
Drama
and
is tiring for people that are focused on not drama.
Yeah.
And he's not focused on that. Actually, it's interesting, and I was telling you, Chael Sonnen and I've spoken to a few times, and Chael is very good at drama. He's developed the ability to do it. Connor, to some degree, is very good at it, but kind of decided that he was so good at it, and it was so foundationally, monetarily making him income and growing all his things. Then he was like, wait a second, to be as great a fighter as I want to be, this stuff is taking way too much attention.
Yeah, it's cutting in.
Yeah, it's cutting in. And I think to some degree, Cruz became really good at provoking people. He became really good at having people talk about him for those things, he became good at using it as a weapon. But eventually he's like, I'm a fighter. Yeah. I'm not a Kardashian. I'm a fighter, you know? And I think that's what he was ready to be over.
Yeah.
And but when you hear people talk about something over, if they're talking about the fight itself, you get the feeling that they're in a rush then.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And that's not where you want to be. You want to be – but he can address the parts that he wants to be over. Instead of it just being, I just want to get this behind me, what is it? Let's take it out. Let's look at it. Let's analyze it. Let's see what is it that you want to get behind you. How much does it really matter? How much is it going to impact the performance? Let's separate all that stuff from the actual fight itself. Mm-hmm. He did that with the performance. We could see the performance was spectacular.
Yeah.
But that's something that's going to happen more and more for him now. Dominic Cruz is gone to another level. People are excited to see Dominic Cruz. People are excited to see Demetrius Johnson now too. You know, that's going to start happening more and more. He didn't have to deal with that stuff as much. But now, after what he did to Cejudo, people are going to be excited to watch him fight more than they were before. The casual fans are going to be. So he's going to get he's going to get more of that kind of attention. He's going to have to deal with that stuff more and more. So he needs to address that so he stays on point. It's like Rockhold was the champion now. You know, that's a different spot you're in right now.
Yeah.
You're the champ.
Yeah.
Verdum was a champ.
Yeah, neither of them are right now.
They've never been the champ before. Yeah. So that's a new thing you have to deal with. You can deal with it, but you have to deal with it. You can't just...
You don't deal with it by not dealing with it.
Yeah, you can't just go with it and just keep doing, you know, just ignoring it or whatever. You have to address that stuff. Nate has to deal with that going into the Conor fight. Nate's a superstar.
Yeah.
You know, and the reaction Nate got at 199 when he's standing beside hugging Dana and all that, he's never had that before. So he has to deal with that now. He has to deal with... How is that changing him? What's the expectations and how mentally is it affecting him? All these things can be dealt with, but they need to be accounted for and discussed either internally or with someone, and then you can go ahead and put in that performance.
If you were to know somebody that was going through that type of growth or championship or whatever, and you said to them, so what have you done to sort of deal with this kind of thing? And they said, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You would be concerned?
Yeah, because then I'd be like, well, things are different now, right? You know, things are different now. You know, you're getting a lot more attention. You're getting a lot more hate. You're getting a lot more money. You're getting a lot more whatever it might be. Things are different. And we have to acknowledge that things are different. And then how is that? Like, how are the media obligations? Are they impacting your training? Have you adjusted schedules? You know, figuring out what's changed and what we want to keep the same and how we can keep that sharpness, that focus there. Because if you're not careful, you'll get carried away with it. You'll start believing your own hype. You'll get overconfident.
Right.
And you'll start to get complacent.
Yeah. That, and this is, we recognize, I mean, I asked you about this, about Conor, about Ronda on the way up. All of those things can affect you mentally, but they can also just affect your allotment of time.
Yeah.
You know, if you used to have to do 3 hours a week of dealing with media and you decided to spend 2 hours a week on Twitter and Facebook, and now you have to do 20 hours a week or 30 hours a week on that, and if you're going to maintain all that social media crap, that's now become 12 hours a week. Your whole life has changed.
Yeah.
Your whole schedule has changed.
Yeah.
When you prepare your food and when you rest and when you recover, when you do the real work. And we have seen that affect big stars.
Yeah.
But how could it not?
Yeah, it has to. But it's then a matter of quality training, smart training, getting the smart work done. There will have to be adjustments. You can't just keep the same schedule. You don't have the same amount of time. So it's getting maybe more, you know, tweaking the schedule a little bit, figuring out the time slots where you can do certain things, trying to have a little bit more control over the media stuff instead of it just being, I do training here and then I do the media stuff here and then I come back and I train. Maybe we can get that pushed to a time that suits on my rest day or whatever it is, you know, trying to figure out a little thing that works so it's not impacting the thing that got you here, which is that preparation, you know, and the mental focus as well as the, you know,
which is a part of preparation.
It's part of preparation. And when the prep's not there and the training's not there and the hours are not there and the work's not there, then the mental's not there. But the mental can go on its own too. That focus can just go away because you start to get – you carried. It's natural that we would get carried away with the hype and everyone telling you're the best.
Or the worst.
Yeah.
Or whatever. We've seen some fighters who literally – and I know at some point you worked with Cathal Pendred. I remember watching as – people started to sarcastically call him the greatest of all time. A lot. And I remember thinking, and I know you don't comment on people you've worked with, but I personally remember thinking, at some point, this guy has to be able to make that funny to himself or irrelevant or both. So those things are very, very interesting. So before we get on with more questions, I know there's probably some cruise stuff in there, which I'm interested to talk about.
Yeah.
Actually, some of this brings up a question that I had. And sometimes when we're talking about stuff, a lot of people will mention to us, which is very kind, that this will carry over into lots of their jobs or lives, which is something I always try to push out of this. But I've never asked specifically about the idea of stress management.
Yeah.
Now, so you are any athlete, it's a stressful thing. You want to go fight people for a living.
Yeah.
It's a stressful thing to train to be a professional athlete. It's a stressful thing, some of these guys who are growing. It's a stressful thing for Dominic Cruz to go from injured to rehabbed to a champion to on television. These are stressful things.
The training itself is stressful.
Yeah.
Sparring
against, fighting is stressful.
Sparring against killers.
Yeah. So these are stressful things in their life, and I use them because it's an exaggerated example. But anybody watching this show has a job or a wife or a husband or children or a schedule, and their lives get stressful. Is stress management something consciously that we have to address with an athlete or somebody watching, or is it something that we fold into the whole picture?
It's constantly happening.
Yeah. All right. First of all, what is stress?
Okay, stress doesn't need to be a negative. I think we're talking about the negative side of stress instead of the positive benefits of it, because there are some.
Yeah.
But the negative side of it, it gets to anxiousness levels where things start to feel too much, and the symptoms or the consequences, the side effects can be where you disengage from what it is you're doing. Fighters just don't fight anymore.
They don't train
as much or whatever. They just don't. Yeah. They just disengage. They can come up with excuses of like why the quality of the work won't be as good. The people in every kind of walk of life can do that, where they start to kind of handicap themselves because the stress is all too much. They come up with a reason why they
to get away
to fail.
It's okay
to fail because I had this and this and this.
Yeah, or they binge on comfort foods, or they binge on booze, or they any number of coping mechanisms that actually create more stress.
Yeah, can make you sick. Yeah. You know, your immune system gets knocked down because of all that. Your sleep gets affected, which has a knock-on effect to the immune system. Mm-hmm. And it's just
eating.
It's not a good
affected.
Thing.
Yeah.
It's not a good thing.
If unmanaged and unrecognized and unaccepted, like we're talking about, well, I'm nervous about this fight. Well, let's put it out there.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm feeling stressed. Let's put it out there. Mm-hmm. Then and what is the positive effects of stress?
Well,
you mentioned that
the use stress, the kind of the positive thing can be when you feel that stress, it can like the worry of this guy might knock me out in this fight. Mm-hmm. Then there's a stress with that, but then it can cause you to work harder. Mm-hmm. It can cause you to put in a little bit more of that drive and training and get the best out of your work and bring you to a new level. You know, that's what Bisping mentioned that against Rockhold, that thank you for bringing me to another level, because he felt that stress of this guy has beaten me before and he could beat me again. And I have to up my game here. I have no choice. Yeah. I have to do it. If I want to get this done, I need to. So that can be a positive as in terms of motivation.
Mm-hmm. So we've laid that out. Then now we find you've got an athlete or a person and they are becoming stressed. You've addressed it with them and they recognize it. Stress management. How do you take a fighter who's overtraining, overthinking his fight, or has risen up and suddenly is on a 4-fight winning streak, but he knows now he's got to fight killers? Somebody who's become much larger than they used to, whatever the thing is. Yeah. What do we do with them? And is it an ongoing thing or something specific that we're doing?
Well, it's ongoing for me at the foundation level of it, which would be food and sleep and just physically obviously, for a fighter, it's different with exercise, but for a general public, making sure you take time to exercise. You know, if you're doing those things, if you're getting the right amount of sleep, the right foods into you, and the good quality exercise every week, that's going to help. Mm-hmm. That's going to help. You're going to feel better. You're going to be able to – your mood's going to be better. You're going to be handle things better.
And for a regular person, if they have any kind of stress challenges – those things immediately are the things to
address.
That
go out the window.
But those are the things to address.
Yeah, but they tend to go out the window when stress comes. They tend to go, you know, the first thing that goes.
It's something that I brought up. If we were talking 5 or 6 episodes ago, and we were talking about exercise, sleep, and food, and I said, you know, if one day I had a child and have nothing else changed in my life, immediately the gym would be the first thing that would probably get pulled out.
Yeah.
And that's true for a lot of people.
It is.
But it's actually when you need to go to the gym or go for a walk or jog or whatever, eat better and sleep. It's when you need it more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's when it's going to really count is when there is that stress now. And your mood is affected by the stress. Mm-hmm. You know, physiologically, the reactions that you're having from the right quality food, sleep, exercise, they cause your mood to be good, and they cause you to be able to look at things, you know, a little bit differently, a little bit more positive, a little bit, you know, you're looking at both sides of things, everything's a bit more, you know, easy to handle. And you're at your best self then, so you can handle things better. That's always needs to be there. For fighters, and when we replace doing exercise with not doing too much exercise, not training too much.
Right.
I had a fighter this morning, one of the young guys.
That bell curve, just like confidence.
Yeah, training.
Lots of training is great, and then too much training starts.
No training is terrible.
Yeah.
You're in the optimal, but there is overtraining.
Yeah,
it's a real thing.
Yeah.
So I had one of the young guys this morning get in touch. He just, you know, wanted a little chat or whatever. And he was saying he was taking a rest this week because, you know, he's kind of been overtraining last week and he kind of feeling it. And this is not the first time that's happened. Mm-hmm. You know, this has become a little bit of a pattern for him now where
binge training.
Yeah, just he loves what he's doing. And he's really, really good and he's passionate about it. He's got that obsessiveness about the training. But it's that pattern of rest, overtrain.
Right.
Like train, overtrain.
Rest.
And then again and again and again, I'm like, okay, we need to step in here now and recognize what's happening before we get to overtraining point. Because you can't just keep repeating the patterns.
And you're actually getting a detriment because now you have to get that, you know, rest debt or sleep debt or recovery debt, and you have to pay it. Whereas we wouldn't have to take that time off if we just got to optimal
instead of overtraining. So then it's about readjusting the schedule a little bit, not doing every session that you possibly can, taking a rest day in the middle or, you know, toning down the intensity on certain days or, you know, that kind of thing. So he's going to be tweaking his kind of schedule a little bit now and understanding that the idea that doing more is better is, you know, it's not true as much as it's there for a young fighter who feels like I'm down here and I'm looking up at the top guys and they're up here and the only way I can get to them is by putting in as much work as I can. But there is that line you can cross. So you need to be smarter with that approach. So that's what fighters tend to need to be able to manage is not training in too much. You know,
I think I told you when I started training, I was like, you know, I would train martial arts, but I wanted to fight. And I was 37 years old. And it's like, if I'm going to fight at all, I got to learn all this stuff right now.
Yeah.
And I overtrained to the point that my entire digestive system shut down.
Yeah.
So just everything was like, For days. And I went to the doctor and he asked me what I was doing. And I laid out he said, you've overtrained to the point that your body is shut down. Your brain wouldn't allow, you know, some people's brains will shut them down. Some people's emotions will shut them down. And yours was your digestive system finally said, no, I'm just going to dump everything I have. So this guy has to stay in.
Yeah. You know? And there's a psychological thing with that.
It was terrible. It was awful.
There's a psychological thing, obviously, with that need to do as much as possible. But what you want to do is to step in and be like, what's your training goals and what are you trying to improve on? It's not just a matter of doing every session possible. It's like practical training and purposeful training and getting the best out of your training. That's what you want to be doing. So that's one of those things for stress management. We're talking about the foundations of how to manage it is food and sleep and exercise, either getting enough of it or not getting too much, or just the right amount of it. So that's crucial at all times. But then that management of stress, you want to be managing before it becomes something you need to, you know, address now because it's gone too far. You want to be, as things get changed, you get a new job and you get new responsibilities or you got a kid on the way or whatever these different things are. Let's discuss what what the new challenges are here. What's going to and what the worries are, what the concerns are. Some of them are probably irrational, and when you talk them through, you'll find out that they're irrational. Some of them are. There will be a, you know, a learning period over if you get a new job or if you move up a new level. If you get signed to the UFC or you know, whatever it might be, you turn pro. There's new challenges now. There's a new level. But well, we can plan for this. We can mm-hmm. you know, we can prepare for it. So discussing it, figuring out a plan for it, that's crucial, so that the perspective is in the right place, then you go and handle it instead of just plowing through. And then it become you're fighting the stress yeah. at the same time. Right. It's all too much.
And then it's going to
yeah.
be yeah.
So prevention is better than cure is what
right.
I'm basically saying.
Yes, good point. That's true in a lot of things in life, and that was true for Rockhold. Had
yeah.
we dealt with it to prevent this problem, we wouldn't have to be dealing
yeah.
with it day of and after yeah. and stuff. That's
and now he's gone from overconfidence.
Yeah.
To almost diffidence,
yeah.
where the confidence is really low now. He could account for that loss to Vitor, maybe. You know, that's an easier one to account for, that spinning kick that was
yeah.
Vitor,
yeah.
TRT coming out of his eyeballs.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that guy was jacked.
Yeah, it's so it's a different, it's, yeah. a, it's an easier fight to account for. This one is a little trickier now, but again, he's still Luke Rockhold. This
yeah,
is the
right.
thing. That
he's the guy who beat Chris Weidman in the fourth round.
Yeah.
Pounded him.
Yeah,
out.
And
yeah.
he's the guy who beat Michael Bisping the
yeah.
way he beat Michael Bisping.
Yeah,
he's
right.
still Luke Rockhold, so he...
Yeah. He destroyed Lyoto Machida. This is the guy he
yeah.
is.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
He beat Jacare. He's a top guy, so he needs to account for what happened. And mm-hmm. and not just a matter of Bisping got lucky with a left hook that I just turned into as he was landing it. Mm-hmm. So you
it's going to happen.
It's just timing with bad luck. It's not that. There was a lot more to it than that. And if he's honest enough about the issues and the preparation and the mental state and everything, and then he can do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where he's at right now. Right now he's probably still a bit too emotional, but over the next week he needs to start sitting down and addressing what happened fully, not just Bisping got lucky with a left hook. That's not what happened.
Even if I thought that was what happened, which I didn't, or his coach did or his buddies did, that is of no value.
No
to
value.
Him. There's nothing he can do with that except, well, next time. But even if there was some weird truth to that, which there isn't, he'd be better to look for real reasons that he could quantify,
exactly.
he could fix.
Yeah, exactly.
This would be a better result for him to find his flaw in it. And again, that's probably true in most things in life. If you end up getting in a fight with somebody always, say somebody you work with or your friend or a business partner or something, you could say that guy's an asshole.
Yeah.
Or you could say, what am I doing to cause this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because if you ask what you're doing to cause it or what you're doing to not fix it, you can address that.
Yeah.
If you're saying that guy is the problem 100% of the time, then there's nothing we can do about it. I can't change him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So in most things, seeking your own cause, your own failure, something you can repair will give you more ability to improve the situation.
Hugely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's about
you
now,
can fix you. You can change you.
You can, it's finding what the controllables are in it. There will be non-controllables,
mm-hmm.
and we need to identify those, but there will be controllables mm-hmm. for sure after a fight. So Rockhold needs to learn from the first Bisping win, which sounds ironic, but to me, just looking at it, he attributed the win to the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
He attributed it to being better than the guy, you know, the one-handed thing. And so when he attributed the win, it was to all that stuff. It was, you know, just, I'm up here. Now he needs to learn from that and what he really attributed in the last two. If it is, you got lucky, you landed a fluke shot, you know, that's it.
Will change nothing.
Change nothing, and he hasn't learned anything from the first fight. Mm-hmm. He hasn't learned from the win, which, you know, he could have done. So that's on him now. Let's see what he does with it. The same, this is huge for Cormier and Jones, for Diaz and McGregor, for all the rematches coming up. As well, there's a lot on the rematch side of this fight as well. There's the complacency and all that different stuff for the winner. We talked about that in depth on one episode, but that's a stark lesson for Jones and Diaz and Jacek and all the people heading into rematches now. Is just because I won the first one doesn't mean anything. This is a unique event this time.
You know what's interesting? There's something about Diaz where he has seemed so much smarter, so much wiser than people give him credit for. You know, like even you pointed out, Ed, you hadn't seen it. I had seen it. That first time he called McGregor out, he's like, you know, these guys were beat before they got in with you.
Yeah.
Just recognizing that, and I basically implying, and I won't be, just recognizing that was a powerful thing.
Yeah.
But when he was sitting there being interviewed, it's Conor McGregor, you've been hit by hard guys. Is he a hard puncher? And he finally came out and kind of said, yeah, sort of. To me, it felt like he was figuring out what's the right thing to say in the context of it, not lying to himself.
Yeah.
Diaz may well lie to the audience because the audience are just crops.
Yeah.
You know, like for the fighter to go and monetize. Their feelings aren't specific to – they don't have an effect on Nate Diaz. And Nate Diaz might be saying something as it may affect his opponent because his opponent is just also a crop that he needs to harvest.
Yeah.
But what he sort of says to himself is different than the things that he says to other people, and you can feel it.
Yeah, yeah. No, he had planned the Conor fight in his head for a while. You know, it was a short notice fight, but he wanted that fight because he saw things that, like when he called him out, like you said, you know, they were beaten in the press conference, and that's not me. He knew that Aldo and Chad Mendes and Poirier and all the different guys had been affected by Conor's trash talk, whatever you want to call it.
Fairly heavily.
Very heavily, I think.
Yeah, Aldo in particular.
Yeah, and Dustin. And and Nate was like, I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
I've tried to do it to guys. Yeah. I know what this is. Yeah, it's not going to work on me.
And so he was right.
He had addressed that already, so he was good in that sense. But then he had to, you know, address other sides of his own game and everything like that. But he had accounted for it.
Yeah.
You know, and people are now starting to give him credit for, you know, his whole game, including his mental game. But that's been there. It's just a matter of, for me, the problem with him has been inconsistency.
Yeah.
You know?
If it's a bigger fight, he's more focused
on it.
He's
interested in even. You know, like sometimes he says it and it sounds like an excuse that he wasn't interested in the fight. I believe it, though.
I do, too.
But that's on him to make himself interested in those fights.
Yeah, you can't go – well, I mean, actually, you can do whatever you want. I was going to say, you can't go losing fights that you have the ability to win just because you're not interested. But you can if you want to.
Yeah, you can.
You know what I mean? You can do whatever you want. There's also an element of Nate Diaz, if the goal was to have and win big fights, to be a great martial artist and be rich – Nate Diaz has done those things.
Yeah.
So Nate Diaz can do exactly what he wants to do.
Yeah.
And if part of it is like, I don't care about these fights. I don't care about these belts. I don't care about no titles. I want big fights and big money. He's accomplishing that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And it's going to be fascinating, this one, in the build-up, to see how Conor is, what the trash-talking levels are like. It's different now because you just lost to the guy. So what way is he going to be? What way is Nate going to be? That's going to be, you know, I can't wait to see all that stuff, you know. As much as that stuff is hype and it's whatever, with these two, it's a little different and it'll mean something a little bit more as we go into the fight. So it's going to be we'll be discussing this stuff as it builds up.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. There's UFC 200 is coming, so that will be the big focus.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's probably – we're going to be talking about that a lot.
Yeah.
I took this in many different directions since we were answering questions.
Yeah,
but so we did get two related to Bisping.
Yeah, so the Bisping Rockhold one, I think we've covered it.
Yes.
We've got another one related to the other fight that night, the Faber-Cruz fight.
Mm-hmm.
So Jeb Hart in New Jersey. How damaged must Faber feel to realize how far his rival has passed him by? Which is an interesting way of looking at that fight.
Mm-hmm.
What's Faber thinking now? Because, you know, he went into this fight, this, you know, arguably the biggest fight of his life, you know, to finally win the UFC title and fighting Dominic Cruz and everything. And he gave it his best shot, but it is a bit true that Dominic has gone to another level since they fought, you know, even the second time. And Uriah has maybe stagnated or not gone up to the same levels that Dominic has reached. And that's a tough spot Uriah's in right now, you know, dealing with that loss and what it means for him.
Well, yes. And I think he will... If he hasn't, what today when we're recording this was late in the week, later in the week after that fight. And Uriah, I suspect, will accept that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what other choice you have. He's not an excuse maker.
No.
So I think you've got to look at it and go, well, damn, this guy really is that good.
Yeah.
He really, really is that good. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And I think if that is the case – you're faced with three specific options that I can come up with. One, they're all informed by some other truths of his life. He's very wealthy and very successful in many other things.
Yeah.
He's by all accounts and everything that one would look at it. He seems to have a very full and exciting life
yeah.
in a number of ways that included the potential for being a UFC champion and likely now does not.
Yeah.
So whatever choice you make with that knowledge are a couple of them. Some people would not fight anymore. Mm-hmm. And some people would say, I'm still a well-paid prize fighter who can put on exciting fights and enjoys the challenge and so forth. And those two things are both at play.
Yeah.
They're both very much entirely his choices at play. And you, I think you'll maybe have a comment on when is a good time to choose either of those.
Yeah.
And I think the third one is ask yourself, is it possible if I stopped running the gym, stopped doing all these things, handed my real estate stuff over to my father or whatever answers you have and said, I'm going to do nothing but focus on fighting for 18 months. Could I change this situation? I think the answer to that is not likely mm-hmm. because of how far that guy has gone.
Yeah.
But it's admirable sometimes where people who have accomplished great things in their life wouldn't accept that and would go for that.
Yeah.
So I think that is still a possible choice for him, right or wrong,
yeah.
because it's consistent with who he is. Mm-hmm. I can accomplish anything. I've proven it many times. I'm going to drop everything and go and beat this guy. But I think that is a long way off, and you'd have to
– It's a long road yeah. to get to that yeah. shot again.
Exactly.
A long road.
And that doesn't mean don't do it.
Yeah.
But it's something
– To be realistic about what it means though.
I think that's pretty unlikely.
Yeah.
Because of the sacrifice required to even try that
yeah.
would be to give up almost all these other really fun and exciting yeah. and successful things in life. So yeah. I think we probably rule that one out, and we're left with – Say, this has been fun, man. I've had a great adventure. I'm going to pass it on to some of the younger guys. I'm mm-hmm. going to run my gym. I'm going to run my real estate. I'm going to do other things, get into some television, which I think he's done a bit of and stuff.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to be a prize fighter. I get paid $100,000 a fight. I'm going to find fights that I still am excited to do, and I'll do a few more.
Yeah.
Those are the likely two
yeah.
scenarios.
Right? And I think those two scenarios – He can do a bit of both of those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can still have those big fights.
Once a year.
And still Uriah Faber. He's still going to be, yeah. he's still a draw. He's still going to have big fights. Have some fights like that and do all the same stuff, mm-hmm. the managing the gym and yeah. all the businesses yep. he's got and everything. So he can do that, I think.
Both of those are viable.
Yeah, yeah, at the same time.
Yeah. So to get to that, we have to accept
yeah,
his,
yeah.
his
and
message.
And there is a lot of emotion right now for Uriah. Mm-hmm. Like, as it's very similar to Bisping and Uriah. Like they've been around for a long time. They've never been UFC champion. And Bisping gets it done on the night, and Uriah falls short. And the contrasting emotions there is unbelievable.
Mm.
It's not just that he lost. It's who he lost to as well. Mm. That's part of it.
And he got shut out more.
Yeah,
or less.
And it was a dominant victory.
Yeah.
Like it was one judge gave him one round.
I think the third or something. It was one round where he touched him kind of, and Dom kind of stumbled
yeah.
and went down.
Yeah, so, but the emotions of that are raw and they're mm-hmm. real. So it's gonna hurt. It's gonna hurt a lot. You can hear him in the post fight stuff. The way we heard Conor dealing mm-hmm. with the loss with Diaz, we could hear Uriah kind of processing a little
mm-hmm.
bit in talking about Cody straight to like
yeah.
Cody Garbrandt and
yeah.
and like. You know, he's my guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'll kind of vicariously, he'll get the belt and we'll get the belt.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing that he's got that kind of somewhere to put his yeah. energy and everything.
Mm-hmm.
What I liked, and I don't know if anyone picked up on this, but one thing that Cruz said in the presser after was he's been a former champion, talking about Uriah,
yeah.
which is a great thing
yeah.
to have said because
yeah.
he didn't need to say that, but it was like a little... You know, a respect thing
yeah.
to prove because he was the champion.
Yeah.
He was the featherweight champion
whole
of the world.
Yeah.
WEC champion
yeah.
was the champion.
Yeah.
The reason Aldo didn't get handed his belt when he
mm-hmm.
joined the UFC, he had earned that by beating mm-hmm. Uriah Faber.
Yeah,
in the WEC, that's why
right.
he was the UFC champion.
The lineal,
Uriah
Faber is the lineal featherweight champion
yeah, for
of
sure.
the world.
Yeah,
yeah.
There was
yeah.
Diaz.
Yeah,
or there was Conor.
Yeah.
Freudian slip there.
Yeah.
There was Diaz. I did it again. There was Conor McGregor. Then there was – before that, there was Jose Aldo. Before that, there was Uriah Faber.
Yeah,
he was
right.
the featherweight champion.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
And it was nice of Dominic Cruz
yeah.
to recognize
now
that.
Now Diaz is the featherweight champion.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I meant.
Diaz
that's
is the featherweight champion.
Yeah.
He couldn't make 145 pounds. But
yeah.
So
it was nice of Dominic Cruz to recognize that. It was kind of giving him that respect that he mm-hmm. had been a former champion. And
yeah.
he had been.
Yes.
So he now can start to, you know, look back on his career a little bit. He can start
mm-hmm.
doing that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
If he might still have a few more fights, but if the road to the title is most likely gone, then he can start to look back with pride on what he's achieved in his career so far.
Yeah.
He was that champ. He had some huge wins. He's earned a lot of money, and he's made a great name for himself, fan favorite, all the different stuff he's been able to do. Plus, looking ahead now, he's got a lot going on. He's one of those guys who can step away from the sport and has loads of options. So that helps. You know, that helps with it. So you don't want to live in regret.
Yeah.
After your career is done. What could have been and what might have been.
That will have negative effects on the rest of your life.
It will. Yeah. You don't want to be sitting when you're an old man, you know, feeling like that bitterness of what never happened. There's no point to that. So he can start to address that now with the way he's looking at the perspective he has. Dominic is just better. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the reality. He put everything he had into the fight, but it wasn't good enough. So there's no point in looking back with regrets now on your career. It's not going to do any good. So instead, it's not like you need to be fake and creating a legend that's not really there. He can look with pride on what he was able to accomplish. I've had a few guys who've had to retire early for different reasons. And all of a sudden, they're dealing with that. Like, they were looking ahead at what they wanted to get done and all they could achieve. And now it was taken away just like that. And then you have to look back and what did I get done? And you know, instead of looking at regret of what you never got done, there's some pride of what you were able to achieve and all the great nights you had and everything like that. So that's where I want his head now starting to go to that direction. And that starts this early.
Right. It may have already started on some level.
Yeah.
You know, even when it looked like this was not going to happen.
Yeah.
Although, hard to say. I spoke to him a few years ago about, you know, are you going to get back to fight for – are you going to be the UFC champion still? It's still a priority. And he was like, of course I am.
Yeah.
And you believed him that was the goal. And that's why I brought up that last arm. It's like you have to really entertain, is this still possible?
Yeah.
And the answer, there have been weirder things than a 43-year-old or a 42-year-old making – but the amount of – you have to be realistic. We must sacrifice so much. Are we in that place where we really would? And we thought we did that already and then got here. But it's, you know, who was the second best basketball player in the world when Michael Jordan was the best? You know, who was the second best hockey player in the world when Wayne Gretzky? There's a certain amount of, if there's somebody comes along at the time you're there and they just are that good, there's a reality to that. I mean, we all – part of – the beauty of watching fighting and part of the amazing thing to watching other athletics and other people accomplish great things is it can inspire you. But there are certain limitations in the world and nobody else can be Dominic Cruz right now. He had the perfect blend of all the things to create the scenario where he is Dominic Cruz.
Yeah.
And Uriah Faber lived during a period where that was there.
He has to accept that. Plus, there's a little bit of it. If he is still in that coaching role and that team leader role, he can teach certain things to the likes of Cody Garbrandt and other guys coming through of the lessons he learned from his career and maybe where he kind of fell short or, you know, whatever he's learned. He can pass that on to those guys now so that they can, you know, they can take from those lessons, even if he can't do it himself.
Yeah, very interesting. It was one of the reasons I think a lot of people were interested in this fight card and why it was such an emotionally fun card to see the lead up and the night is because he and Bisping were in very similar situations.
Very similar.
And we got to see both outcomes.
Yeah.
So that was really neat. What other questions do we have?
Yeah, there's one more I want to get to here. This is from Thomas Smith. He says, is there a psychological aspect that contributes to a fighter's chin? He's referring specifically to Dan Henderson, or is it just a physical thing?
Yeah.
So we saw that with the Dan Henderson fight, where he was almost knocked out and kept, you know, just kept fighting through it.
Yeah.
To me, the chin part is not mental. That's a physical thing. If you get hit on the button, you're going to get knocked out.
If you're unconscious, because the concussive power of that cause usually a coup contra coup injury where the brain floats through the fluid and it touches
just
one
gets
side.
Shook over.
It touches the other side and it shuts it off. And that's not psychological.
No.
That's physiological.
Yeah. But there is a mental aspect to what happens next if you're still in the fight.
If you're conscious.
If you're still there, like Henderson was.
Yeah, right.
That just determination when he gets back up against the fence and he just keeps going, mm-hmm. that's instinctive. And that's, you know, that a lot of that is mental based on a few different factors, such as fight you've been in before and you've kind of learned
Capabilities.
What you're capable of and if you keep going. The way you've trained in the past, being in the deep waters and that kind of stuff in training, the simulation kind of thing where you just keep going. Even not just sparring, I'm talking about mm-hmm. conditioning work and those really grueling sessions mm-hmm. where you just keep going. That's your instinct, that wrestling mentality.
If you're in a room full of people that quit and throw up and you don't.
Yeah, and it just reinforces that. I keep going. When mm-hmm. when it gets tough, I keep going. I dig in here.
It's a trait of this of my body and mind.
Yeah, and it can you can pride yourself on that. You were speaking about Cathal Pendred earlier. That was one of those things that he had. That he won fights because of that.
Yeah,
you know, he won fights because he just outwilled the other guys. And we've seen it. Like Dan Anderson's a good example. The Diaz brothers are a good example. Lots of guys like that.
And any of them use Cathal as an example. To some degree, that is who you already were.
Yeah.
But even the who you already were came up from how you grew up.
Yeah.
And the things, the experiences in your life.
Yeah.
And then who you already are, we can then build on that.
Yeah.
It's a muscle that can be grown.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's part of your personality, basically, mm-hmm. to be that guy who just grits. And when he's hurt, he just keeps going and there's no quit and all that kind of different stuff. That's part of their personality. That gets shaped from very young age. Whether that's through, you know, coaches in different sports or the way parents responded or the way you see someone else respond and you didn't like that. You know, some guy in the schoolyard in a fight just, you know, quit and you didn't like that reaction. I'm not going to react like that. Yeah, that kind of thing, you know.
Your failure that maybe you then failed and realized how awful that felt to give up. And I brought him up because I was am a very big fan of his, and it was the reason I brought up that is how odd it was to me that you couldn't look at that guy and be inspired by his push, his desire, that maybe he would push through anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that in and of itself, although the good part about that is one day when you no longer fight, that will apply to all things in your life.
Yeah.
The inability to be made to quit is going to come in pretty handy in all the things he does and anyone like him and Dan Henderson when they stop fighting.
Yeah. So there is that mental side to that. It's not the chin, it's just mm-hmm. the heart or whatever you want to call it, determination, that no quit kind of spirit. Mm-hmm. It gets shaped through, like, there's no way of going back over looking at what the little things were that got said to you when you were a kid mm-hmm. or what things you saw when you were a kid that started to shape that mm-hmm. in you. There's no way of doing that. We don't have any way of recognizing all these factors.
Time travel doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. And even if it did, it would be very difficult to know how and when exactly that started mm-hmm. to get shaped and reinforced.
Because you can't study an entire life.
Yeah.
And even if you could, you can't study the reaction to moments in that entire life.
And they're all crossed and they're all interrelated and everything. But for sure, there is a mental side to that drive and that determination.
Yeah. So there's no mental to chin in terms of if you are unconscious, you are unconscious.
Yeah.
But if you are conscious, it starts to become heavily mental.
For sure.
We just touched on growing and what shapes you. If you understand that is true of everything in your life, it's incumbent on you to understand that is true of everything in the future, too.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people will say, oh, I can't do that. I'm not that kind of person. It's like, you could be that kind of person.
Yeah.
All we have to do is understand that you will be changed by the choices that you make going forward and the way that you react to things going forward.
Yeah.
The limitations exist now, but they don't have to exist later. You know?
Exactly.
You know, if you are shaped by every eventuality in your life, that doesn't have to continue in a direction. You can be shaped by every eventuality that goes forward in different ways.
Yeah. And it's true for everything. And it's especially true then when we look at fighters who've had setbacks, like Bisping, like mm-hmm. Dustin Poirier, like Max Holloway, mm-hmm. guys like mm-hmm. that who responded to setbacks in a certain mm-hmm. way where they've kind of okay, what adjustments do I need to make? What things do I need to change up here? What lessons can I take? I'm not at that level now, but I can be in the future. And if I do certain things and I change certain parts of my approach and my preparation, then I believe I can get there. Uh-huh. And what we've seen from Max and from Dustin since they lost to Connor has been just spectacular performances.
Yeah. It's an interesting one because I spoke with Dan Hardy. I did a couple of breakdowns. And one that we did was before they booked 202 officially. We kind of thought that was going to happen. We talked about it. And he very much says – and he's less influenced by his own enjoyment in some ways. He's probably a little more analytical than I am, or he still talks about how he is a fan, and he is very much – he has bias with things he likes and other ones – people he cheers for. You know? Yeah. So he acknowledges that very well. But he very clearly said it may be – you know, after Connor's career, when people realize that he's one of the most special martial artists of our generation. And so I say that only because the people in the know understand that. But if you accept that that is true, and not everyone does accept that's true, and that's a different kind of bias, fighting somebody like that will change you. Mm-hmm. And both Max Holloway and Poirier, we saw it really, really change them for the better. They were like, okay, that's that level. Oh, well, he's just a man.
Yeah.
I can reach that level. Also, I can learn some of the things that he did that worked against me, whether they're psychological or whatever, they took it. And Diego Brandão did not.
Yeah.
Diego Brandão went a different direction. It's not an automatic. You have to do that work.
No.
And we haven't seen Dennis Seaver, so we don't know what he did. But it's not 100% of you are going to do it. The ones who taste it like the taste and figure, how do I do that? They go that way.
Yeah.
And I think to some degree, Max Holloway and Poirier both have that real hunger.
Yeah, for
you
sure.
You know, the real hunger to keep getting better. So a setback from in a special situation where they tasted it, they're like, I believe I can achieve that. Yeah. I can be that good.
They saw it as a setback. That's all.
Yeah.
Not a dead end. You know, just a little setback. You just readjust. Like your analogy of climbing the mountain, you go back down again to come back up.
Yeah. So circle around, sideways, drop a bit, go up a lot, and go back down, circle around. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the way they've seen it and approached it. And it's great to see.
Yeah.
You know, it's great to see. And then you get the ultimate kind of example of what Bisping getting the title win after all the setbacks that he had.
It's still crazy.
And like when he got knocked out by Dan Henderson, you know, that's it. He's not quite at that level. Then he climbs his way back up and he gets beaten by Chael in a close fight.
I thought he
won
that fight, but.
Yeah, it was very, very, very close fight.
Yeah.
And then he gets it back up again to a certain level and then gets knocked out by Vitor Belfort. Mm-hmm. And then he gets up again to a certain level and gets beaten by Luke Rockhold.
Yeah, right.
And then he has to come back up again. And he kept doing it. And he's improved and improved and he's learned along the way. And he's reached the summit now. And it's, you know, it's almost more special to have done it that way than it is for a guy just to come in and just sweep the board and get the belt like maybe the way Connor did or whatever. It's different to have done it like that. It can, you know, you can look back on that with so much pride and all you had to overcome. And it's a lesson to all young fighters coming through then who maybe have had losses or different setbacks earlier in their career and stuff. It's just about how you're going to respond to this now. What lessons can you take? You have to grow from it as well, from the loss. You have to be honest about what happened and grow from it. But it is possible.
Mm-hmm. Do not be surprised. I think it's not a giant chance, but there's a chance that you see Dan Henderson fight him for the belt.
Yeah, I know. I'd love to see Dan just retire now.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it would be such a perfect time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This, I'm sure you can relate this to something, but have you ever played the Blueberry game? The reason you haven't played it is because it doesn't exist. It exists in my house and nowhere else.
Okay,
but
no.
The blueberry game is you've got a thing of blueberries and you eat a few blueberries and you want to end on the tastiest blueberry that you can end on. So and you stop and you eat another blueberry and you're like, oh, that one was terrible. So you know you're going to have another blueberry. But then you have one and you're like, oh, man, that one's really good.
Yeah.
That would be a good one to end on. But then you look, there's a whole thing.
What if there's one?
Exactly. One of them could be even better.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to end on the one that is the tastiest.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll know, oh my God, that one's amazing. Okay, we're done. And sometimes you know the other way. Oh, that was one of those like farty ones. No, I got to have another one. It's the ones that are really, really, really good, but you know there's the possibility of another one like that or an even better one. Plus, you still want a couple more blueberries.
Yeah.
The blueberry game is fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Dan Henderson would look at this one and go, this was a pretty tasty blueberry. Unless they said, why don't you fight Bisping for the title? Yeah. That would be the ultimate blueberry. We'd be ending on the absolute greatest blueberry that has ever existed.
Yeah.
You know? So, but I agree with you. Not because I ever say, this guy should retire. He's too old or he's taking too much damage. That's his call.
Yeah.
I'm not his trusted confidant. I'm a person that watches, talks about fighting for a living. I'm not prepared to say that. And I'm often very offended when I see people who don't know a lot about fighting say, oh, this guy needs to retire. I find that rude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But
it's just that
this one, though, is
how special a moment it was.
Yeah, exactly.
It was in LA and his family there, and it was a beautiful thing. And why can't this be the one that, like, that moment, that signature moment that you got to have?
But that's a pretty fucking great tasting blueberry.
Like,
you know, and I agree. And that's why normally when it is for a negative reason, I will not say that. But because this is such a positive reason, I think it would be really cool if he said, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Also, he never even would ever address it before. And now not only is he addressing it, but he's doing smart things career-wise. He's like, well, if Dana offers me something else, I'll take it.
Yeah.
You know, so he's not only saying he would do it, but he's also looking for a gig while he's at it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of signs that that would be.
Yeah, and that's a tough decision for him to have to make now, because there is that thing, if you do step away, you don't get to feel that anymore. You don't get to have those feelings anymore.
Yeah.
And those special feelings when you fight, there's nothing that can compare to it. And that fight will still be in him. But if you know, it's a tough spot, because in having won, you think, well, I am good enough to keep going. I just knocked a guy out. Look at me. I am still good enough. So there's a lot of different factors. He needs to sit down with close people around him and his family and you know, his team and figure this out and look at both sides. That's all I would ever want my fighters to do when they're at a decision like that, is weigh up both sides as free from the emotion as you can, and come to what you think is the best decision at the time. And you can, you're never going to be perfect. You know, you're never going to make the right decision as such, because you could always go down the road of, what if I had done this instead? How would that have worked out? Just make the best decision you can at the time and then be comfortable with it.
I ran into a friend in LA that I hadn't seen in 20 plus years. And she wasn't a fighter, but she was kind of a rebel, kind of like, you know, had that fight in her, like you just said about Dan. He'd still have that fight in him. Now, when you chat with her, she takes on all kinds of fights against the PTA and against zoning laws and all that kind of stuff. That fight is always there, but there's other things in your life to fight about. There's
so
other
many
things to, like, strive after.
Yeah.
And there's other things, and they may have something to do with your kids, and they may have something to do with all kinds of things about the future.
Yeah.
You may wake up one day and you fight some a crime or something that is unfair to people, or you fight global warming, or you fight police suppression, or whatever kind of thing. That there are other places to have that outlet.
Yeah, 100%. There are different parts of your life, and fighting is just one of those parts. But it's a fun part if you're at that level. But it's going to come to an end at some point. So then it's just a matter of, there is no perfect time, so let's
this is a pretty good blueberry.
Let's weigh it up and try and make that decision as best we can at the time.
It's a pretty good blueberry.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We don't have a ton of time, but we have some time. Do we address the main? I mean, there's always more.
Yeah.
So people, please. This was actually super fun, and it's cool too, because it's cool to see people sort of, you know, casting out things down in these and thinking about stuff and starting to see it more and in mainstream reporting on fighting on Fox and stuff. Mindset is something. So this is something that's happening a lot.
Yeah.
People are curious about it. So more questions would be good. But what will we be talking about? I'm gone to Ottawa next week.
Okay. Yeah.
So if we are getting together, it will be after that. We'll have Rory to talk about and Wonder Boy.
Yeah.
That's going to be very interesting. Also, Pat Cote and Cowboy Cerrone.
Yeah.
A lot of mental stuff there, and a lot, which we'll have to address after the fact. Cowboy Cerrone in and of itself has a very different mental approach.
Yeah.
And there's probably something to talk about there. Connor And Diaz, obviously, yeah. that's going to be unlimited.
Brock coming back.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we'll have to definitely get to that one. Yeah. That so
there's a mental part of that.
100%. You know?
Like people and there's a don't lot of think of Brock as a – they don't think of mentality when you think of – because he's so huge and he's this physical specimen. Mm-hmm. They don't think of the mentality and the mindset. And a lot went into his decision to come back, you know, that in terms of what was the decision mentally and what was eating away at him.
Well, I think we got a few minutes to at least touch on that. So I told you before that I'm just going with a personal experience for the purpose of making my own connection to it. But I mentioned I had thyroidism once, and I was very, very weak. I slept like 12 or 14 hours a day. My mind was super cloudy. I would be trying to work, and one of the guys here was, during the heat of it, was like, okay, just – you got to break down – say this thing about this fight that's coming up. It was George versus this guy. This happened on this date, blah, 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 go. And I would come – and it would be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't actually know what was wrong until I was better. And once I was better, I was like, oh, my God, I was so sick. I had no idea. And the reason I made that connection when I heard Brock talk, and I mean like to the point, I'm like, wow, I had no idea. I was a 4 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Now that I feel like a 9 out of 10. And Brock fought as a 3 out of 10.
Yeah.
With it took him getting fully healthy where he could look back and go, God, I couldn't. Yeah. I wasn't physically in a state to take those fights. I think that is a connection that he made.
Yeah.
Now, how that connects to what it is you want or be not feeling good about those or whatever is separate. But I think him being able to look and go, wow, I was so compromised. That wasn't fair to me to use those to define my ability to fight. I want to do over now that I'm a 9.5 out of 10. Do you think that's –
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I'm sure – and it sounds just from the way he's talking and the fact that he's back – that Overeem loss would have just eaten away at him, you know, because he knows how he felt physically. He knows how he feels now that he's behind the diverticulitis. It's all behind him. He feels physically good. He's like, I know I could have done better if I had one more chance at that guy. And he's gone on to see Overeem now in a title.
Is that a healthy thing to look at? And I would think that there's. It can be healthy or unhealthy depending on how and why you have that perspective. Right?
Yeah. No, it can be a good thing in terms if you can still do it, which he can physically. He's still young enough and able to do it. That can be a big motivation. That can be a good thing knowing that. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to represent myself. It wasn't really me in there. I wasn't, and it's not just for that fight. There was other fights too, but. What could I have done? I know I could have been so much better. Mm-hmm. That would have been eating at him. And then it's like, oh, hang on, I can do this still. And I can get back in. And taking that time, I hope, to look at it, weigh it all up, and be honest about what he needs to actually get done and the preparation he needs to do and the training he needs to do and be in that right shape to be at what is a 10 out of 10 for him.
The reason I said I got a feel that could also be a bad thing or can have another outcome is if you were physically compromised and had some amount of systemic failure, and I mean physical systems, but also your choices, your own mind, you can go, that wasn't me.
Yeah.
That was a disease or whatever. But what if it actually was the disease and some other thing? You don't have the ability to identify it. So it'll be a relief to find out that you had a failure, that you were sick. But it may not be the only reason.
Yeah.
So if it's you were sick plus you made some errors in your preparation or you blame it on the sickness, you're not able to address the other errors.
Yeah,
that happened.
No, for sure. I mean, that happens all the time when we're talking about why fighters attribute a loss to weight. The weight, it was the weight. Yeah. I'm moving back up.
Yeah,
it was the weight. That happens, and then they haven't addressed the other things.
Yeah.
So
that's my point.
Yeah, I'd like to think I'd like to hope, and I hope he has addressed the other things. Because, there probably was. But then they're connected to the sickness, you know.
Right.
The mentality and the preparation couldn't have been as good because he had a severe illness, they are interconnected.
They are.
Now that that's gone and it's behind him, there can be a bit more clarity, and there's no, you know, he can put in the full prep. So if he's honest about all that stuff and he's able to get it done and puts in the work, then you know, it can be a huge motivation having failed and then knowing that there was something else going on. Now you've got a clean slate. Let's go give this everything. I don't want any excuses anymore. I don't want to look back with regret. I want this to be what I know I'm capable of.
It's going to be nuts. It really is going to be.
And it's a tough fight. It's a very tough fight for him.
Very tough fight. And the thinking, I think, was let's find a guy who can strike but is not as good a wrestler. Yeah. And I think whoever made that choice, whether Brock got to make that choice, which he would have had a say, this is a huge stock, or Dana White made that choice, or Joe Silva, whoever is saying Mark Hunt can't wrestle is wrong.
Yeah.
And because my job is to honestly assess the truths of the skill sets. And a lot of people underestimate Mark Hunt's ability to move his feet and to move his feet when you're attacking. They think of takedown defense as what happens when you get his hips. Mark Hunt's very hard to just do that now. Yeah. And I think people, oh, he can't wrestle, he'll take him down. If he's sitting there carefully managing range like he does, the moment he comes in, he matadors him, and he's very good at that. All of a sudden, this can happen 4, 5, 6 times while he's hitting him. It's an incredibly hard fight.
Yeah.
And if it was made with the idea that this guy can put this guy on his back, if he doesn't, hits hard, but he will. I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
I don't think that's nearly as true and clear cut as the thinking. So Brock has to, and there's no way, even if Brock Lesnar was training consistently from the last time we saw him fight till now, that he can compete with the 30 years of preparation of Mark Hunt. It's not, no matter how good of an athlete and how brilliant of a learner you are, it's not possible
to
develop that level of skill. So that is going to, and Brock has to accept that reality.
Yeah, yeah.
And
he has to make it a Brock Lesnar fight.
Mm-hmm. Another aspect that people do say, oh, well, he doesn't like to get hit. Well, that may not be true either, because that's not a forever thing.
Yeah.
There, you can acclimatize yourself to getting hit, and you can desensitize the fear. You can desensitize the impact. There are actual there are ways to train yourself to be way more relaxed when getting hit. And it's been done hundreds of thousands of times and hundreds of thousands of fighters, and it can be done. So Brock doesn't like to get hit is talking about a 3-year-old Brock. And in 3 years, there's a lot you can do to deal with getting hit. And there's no reason to assume that he hasn't. It's possible that he hasn't, but it's also possible that he has.
And the fact he's back, he missed it. Mm-hmm. You know, he missed everything fighting. About it, it seems like. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot. It doesn't jump off the page as a mental kind of a fight when it's a Brock Lesnar fight, but it very much is.
Yeah,
you know,
and for Hunt too.
Yeah.
We'll get into this one heavily the next time we get together. But please send us some more questions because that was really fun and we really appreciate it. Anything, and anything else? Any other last thoughts?
I'm just the big thing for me was the Bisping thing. Just. You know, I couldn't help but be happy for the guy.
Yeah,
it's nothing
too.
Against Luke Rockhold, but I just couldn't help but be happy for Bisping and how he's grown over the years. I felt some – like it's just a beautiful thing, this sport, when it's at that level. I felt the same kind of stuff for Misha when she won the belt as well. It's a special sport when you see things like that.
On just a personal level, I was talking to my wife about it on Monday. I had to leave our vacation. It affected both of us to go and take that commentary job because Mike was supposed to do it.
Yeah.
And him winning the belt made that changed my memory of forever giving up my vacation to go commentate
that. Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? And those ripples carry down to every hundreds and hundreds of Mike's training partners and friends and family, little things, little tiny things like my little tiny thing. And Cormier, you know, is over there. It's like his guy just lost, but that's his other guy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? All of this,
there's
a much bigger ripple to all of these things than you realize until you kind of, you know, every single person in the UFC now works with Bisping in a different capacity than if he didn't work there.
Yeah.
There's all these little interesting ripples, but we were pretty happy for him at my house jumping. There was a lot of jumping up and screaming, really from Dan Henderson.
Nice. Yeah.
From Dan Henderson's elbow on, there was a whole bunch of just lit people. That arena must have been crazy.
Yeah.
And so many people I spoke to in various places were just like, I was screaming at my TV.
Yeah, it was that kind of night.
And that's why we watch fighting.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the only reason, but that's a fun reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
It is. Thank you guys so much. And thank you for the questions. And thank you for the great feedback. And check out David Mullen's website, DavidMullinsSportsPsychology.com, and he's David Mullins, MMA on Twitter. And I'm Robin Black, MMA on Twitter. And thank you so much, and we will see you guys soon.